The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Bothered by the constant horn while you're watching the telly? See the Baywatch or South Africa 2010. Yes, the World Cup is underway. And do you know, for the first time ever, it's on African soil. Yep. Today, the pod team rounds up the colour, the crowds, the clashes of an opening day that made the hair stand up on the back of your neck. Or so I'm told. South Africa, Mexico, and France, Uruguay's bore draw. Then we look forward to Saturday's games as Argentina begin their campaign and USA and England square off in an increasingly heated clash. BP have tried pouring oil on troubled waters, but that doesn't seem to have helped. All of that and other things too in today's World Cup Daily. Ah, hello everybody. And first of all, to Amy Lawrence of The Observer.
Hello.
Hello, Amy. A young lady's got the horn. Yep. Every broadcaster covering the World Cup has to have their own vuvuzela, which they toot in a comic moment at the start of each opening day broadcast. So thanks, Amy, for handling that. So magnificently. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi there, of The Guardian, and John Ashton.
Good evening.
Both of you put in a big shift today on opening day.
John Ashton also has the horn, but there's no vuvuzela anywhere near him.
It's 3 foot long as well. I'm taking the South African colours, but they're the similarities.
I've got shorts on today, but come on.
Maybe he has a canoe in his pocket.
It's equally possible. Did you enjoy opening day, John Ashton?
I did, yeah. It was great fun. I thought the opening ceremony was classy and not as quite as manic as perhaps some in years gone by. And the football, the France Uruguay wasn't a great game, but certainly the opening game was tremendous.
It's great to get it started, isn't it, Barry?
Yes, after all the weeks and weeks of expectation, it was great. And there was a giant dung beetle in the opening ceremony, which it would be a gross dereliction of journalistic duty not to comment on its presence and how it didn't really look that out of place.
Indeed not. And Amy, what did you learn from day one of the World Cup?
Well, I was just really pleased, most of all, that there's been so much mudslinging and rotten rubbish written about South Africa over months and months and weeks leading up to this competition. And I think so many people have been expecting it to be a bit of a horror show. And for one reason or another, not really the sort of joyful festival that the South Africans so clearly want to put on. And I thought it was brilliant that they managed to put on a show that made everybody clearly feel that this was just party time for South Africans, and nobody wanted to talk about any of the problems that everybody's been rattling on about non-stop in the build-up to this World Cup. So let's enjoy the football, let's enjoy the atmosphere, and let's not just bang on about some of the other more negative aspects of South Africa.
All right, well,
if we ignore them, they'll all go away.
Indeed. Richard Williams was there at the opening ceremony, indeed the opening game, at the Soccer City Stadium in Johannesburg. We'll talk to him, hopefully, in just a second. First, though, let's get the news headlines from around the World Cup on day one.
Bong.
Portugal star Nani is out of the World Cup after knacking his shoulder trying to pull off a training ground somersault. "It's the worst mishap I've seen from Nani," said Portugal manager Carlos Queiroz, and that includes the Emma Thompson film with the pigs.
Bong.
Referee for Saturday's England-USA clash, Carlos Simon, has been described by the president of one of Brazil's biggest football clubs as riskier than a subprime mortgage. "He makes such ridiculous mistakes," said the president of Palmeiras, "and he is a very bad referee too," replied FIFA. "We just want the English players to feel at home."
Bong.
And it was joy in Johannesburg at the opening ceremony at Soccer City. 90,000 fans in attendance on Friday, surprised by the involvement of R. Kelly and a giant dung beetle. "We wanted to celebrate a creature that benefits us all by recycling crap," explained the organisers. I don't know what the dung beetle was doing there, though.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Well, there you go then. Everything kicking off Friday with the opening ceremony at Soccer City. One man who was there and is on the line now for us is Richard Williams. Richard, you've been to sports events and happenings of all kind of, sociological, etc., nature all over the world and for a variety of years. How would you describe being in the stadium this afternoon? How did it compare to...
Oh, it was absolutely marvellous. And, I think a lot of people are
are rather sceptical of the Vuvuzela phenomenon. And I think probably on the television it sounds a little bit kind of tinny and buzzy. But when you're actually there, oh boy, it's just sensational. And I was, you know, I thought I was going to find it irritating. But by the end of the match today, I was kind of disappointed when they stopped playing. And what was really fantastic was that after South Africa had scored and Mexico were trying to equalize, every time the Mexicans attacked or had a free kick or something, the chorus of Vuvuzelas became like an extra defensive wall, you know, as if they were trying to blow the ball out of the coal mouth.
Richard, the relentless drone of people complaining about the Vuvuzela is far more annoying than the actual instrument itself. It's kind of racist, I think, because that's what they do in South Africa. If you don't like it, there's a mute button on the TV remote control. Obviously, you have to listen to it in the stadium, but I don't see what the problem is with it.
No, I mean, you can exaggerate the kind of traditional aspect of it. The Vuvuzela is actually a pretty new invention. It's a sort of imitation of the antelope horn, I guess, but it's not that traditional, but it certainly is what they do now. And when you're there, it just kind of, you know, lifts you off your feet. One thing, can I just add one thing today? Well, one thing we learned, apart from that the Vuvuzela is a terrific thing, was that the ball seems to behave itself. You know, watching that match today, the ball didn't behave in any kind of abnormal or erratic way at all. Nobody tried, you know, a kind of Cristiano Ronaldo type sort of toe-end dig of a free kick. But in every other way, I thought, it flew very true.
Richard, that's excellent. Thank you very much for that. And enjoy the rest of the Cup.
Thank you, James. It looks as though we're going to.
You were making faces, at least I think that's what you were doing, Amy, when Richard just said the ball wasn't playing up at all, because I think you think maybe the French had a different experience with it.
Well, I'm just wondering whether, when I was watching the France-Uruguay game, I thought that it looked like France, whenever they were trying to play long passes or set pieces, the ball seemed to fly a lot further and a lot higher and dip a lot more than perhaps they'd anticipated. But maybe that was just France not being very good. So perhaps I won't blame the ball so quickly, and we'll have to see if France improve in the games
ahead. Science Weekly, the Guardian's very own science-based podcast, did their own investigation into the nature of this Jabulani ball. And one of the details that emerges there is that it is actually not lighter than the average ball. I know that's...
You said that in the last podcast, and it wasn't interesting then either.
Yeah, it got kind of... I will keep on saying it until you include it, so let's just get it over and done with. I tweeted earlier today. How about that?
You did?
Yeah.
First time since when?
4 years ago, I think, actually. I asked people to send in pun headlines, and two people did. Producer Ben came up with a nice one after Shabalala's goal. He's got every Shabalala, every whoa, South African heart broken by Mexican comeback. But it's a carpenter's thing. You kids wouldn't know. A video hound tweets and says, World Cup pun headlines. You say, how about Rafael evades his Marquez to bring Mexico back level? Early days. You know, it's a nice start. Plenty of room for improvement. Hey, if you have any thoughts for tomorrow, maybe wait this time until the games have actually been played. And then tweet in any headlines you might have. Follow me at AC Jimbo, or follow Barry Glendenning. What's your address, Barry?
B Glendenning.
And then you'll forward them on. Right, well, there you go. South Africa, anyway, growing visibly in the second half after Shabalala's goal, and almost getting the winner. They've almost become everyone's second team, haven't they, with all those wonderful supporters and etc.
They really endeared themselves to me. I bridled at the fact that a commentator told, you know, on ITV, where it was said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mexico, but everybody's supporting South Africa today. And I thought, well, you know, don't just to make that assumption. But as they were lining up in the tunnel and they started to move out onto the pitch, the entire South Africa team started singing. I don't know what it was they were singing, but they marched down to the pitch in full voice. I thought it was fantastic. And then they had that funny sort of hands on Pienaar's head in the huddle sort of thing. And I thought that's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, and their goal celebration, of course, was fantastic.
Do you think it was fantastic?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it.
It was kind of Agadou-esque, wasn't it?
The fact that they put so much work into it was quite nice. Unless they're like the kids from Glee who can do a perfectly choreographed dance routine at their first attempt, just improvising.
Right. South Africa, do you know they're now 13 games unbeaten?
They are 13 games unbeaten.
Right.
And it's really something I think that a lot of South Africans didn't see coming. And the run had been so poor previous to the, when Pereira came back, going back almost quite a few years, really, with disastrous lack of qualification, even for African Cup of Nations, never mind World Cups. And really, if they weren't the hosts, there's no way that South Africa on merit would be at this World Cup. So they've had to make up so much ground so quickly. And I think in a way, they remind me slightly of the South Koreans in 2002, in the sense that A, it's a nation that has come together that has got a new opportunity to sort of express themselves through football, and you can see the way everybody's responding to it. Even people who don't like football in South Africa, that's massively a black sport, but there's quite a few white people who are not big football fans traditionally, and they're all, it really seems to be getting under their skin really quickly. And as far as the team's concerned, in the same way that Hiddink got hold of South Korea and worked very intensively with them in the period up to that World Cup, with obviously fantastic results, and the way they evolved and grew in confidence as that competition went on, South Africa seems to be making very big strides very quickly. I mean, whether they can go as far as South Korea is very debatable, but it's certainly a good start for them.
Mexico didn't look too shabby either. You could see either of these two teams, in fact, getting a result over the other two teams in the group, couldn't you?
Yeah, in a way, the two games today almost confirmed perhaps what we suspected about Group A, in that it's quite an even group, and it's a chance for all four teams. Nobody really knows, I don't think, who's going to get through to the second phase out of there.
Yeah. Well, the France-Uruguay game, and not quite as thrilling as the opener. As David Heitner put it in his report, the only poetic thing about it was the poetic justice of Thierry Henry having a penalty appeal turned down a short while from the final whistle. Next game... Ooh, sorry.
Have I ever banged on... on the pod before
about, now's the
about,
time
about the Lee Carsley effect is my theory, the Lee Carsley effect.
Go on, John.
Well, it's this Uruguay, I think, are the latest beneficiaries of the Lee Carsley effect. I don't know if you remember 5 years ago or so when he was playing in defensive midfield for Everton, and he was one of those people who everybody who thought they were very much in the know and things would say was so underrated. You know, this player's really underrated and people don't give him the credit he deserves, so much so that he ended up becoming overrated. And I think there's a lot of people who have done this with Uruguay and have been sort of the in the knowers, have said, oh, yeah, these guys are underrated, they're our dark horses, and to such an extent that actually people forget they're actually a fairly average team with a couple of just a couple of stars.
Yeah, they didn't look too special tonight. We'll have a chance to see what they can do in their next game against South Africa. And France, of course, will be hoping to do better against, who does that leave?
Mexico.
Good. Posts. Giseno 1 wants to do swaps of Panini. How very, very sweet. Mitchell Sterling's got some interesting breakdown on stats. Did you know that the Premier League is the best represented league in the World Cup? 118 players, way ahead of the Bundesliga, a surprising second place, who have 84. Italy are there in third with 80, and then Spain are 59. Barcelona and Chelsea, you probably know this, have got 13 players each there. What does surprise me here is that Portsmouth have 8 players at the World Cup, which is more than AC Milan. How the wheel turns in this crazy game of football. Quick post from Aussie Roscoe, who posits an entirely believable sequence of results, thusly. Australia getting beat 1-0 by Germany. Australia beating Serbia 1-0. Q riots, he says. Australia then beating Ghana 3-2. England, meanwhile, beating USA, beating Algeria and beating Slovenia, which means that Australia would meet England in the second round. That's quite possible, isn't it? Of course, they are the big game, I think it's fair to say, of Saturday. Before that game takes place, South Korea take on Greece, which I know we want to spend a lot of time talking about, John Ashton, is that right? Let me just throw you a couple of bones here before you ignore me and we move straight on to the other game. They were both, let's see, Barry's picked up a book and is reading it. It is actually a book about the World Cup. You're doing research.
Yeah, I've got a page open in South Korea, so what do you want to know?
They're undefeated in qualifying.
Yeah, and their coach...
Yep.
It says here, looks like Peter Kay, but he actually doesn't look like him at all.
I wrote that page.
Oh, did you?
Did you, John? All right.
And this is the best looky-likey you could come
up with. South Korea, because they were the big thing about 2002. This team?
They're not as good as 2002, but they're probably a slight improvement on 2006 when they didn't get out of their group.
Right. And how are the Greeks? Because, of course, famous thing about them, last World Cup they turned up to, didn't win any games, didn't get any points, didn't score any goals, conceded 10.
I have to plead utter ignorance.
All right, okay, but we'd probably go with South Korea over them, wouldn't we?
I don't know, I'd say it could be a really boring game.
All right then, nice. Okay, Argentina-Nigeria. Diego Maradona making his return to the World Cup 16 years after getting busted for doping after Argentina-Nigeria. Wow, weird symmetry, isn't it? Everyone, I notice in our prediction, still expecting Argentina to emerge from the cocoon butterfly-like, or like Cinderella in that famous story, you know, with the slipper. And just generally kind of be transformed by the arrival of the World Cup, Barry.
How is that in any way like Cinderella?
Well, you remember that she was a celery maid, and the arrival of
celery maid.
Scullery.
All right.
Scullery maid. It's been a while. Anyway, back to Cinderella. And the arrival of the fairy godmother.
Yes.
Saw her transformed, saw her in a sparkle, made her out of sparkle, if you like. And she was then the belle of the ball, at least until the clock struck. Is this going to happen with Argentina? You're not going to play ball with me, but maybe John or Amy will.
Well, I confidently predicted that Argentina would win the World Cup.
Oh, there you go.
With a confidence I don't really feel, but I'd like to, you know, sound confident. It makes me sound more like I know what I'm talking about.
Since their disastrous qualifying, I know they've done some things like beaten Germany in Germany. Have they begun to show signs of a transformation into a proper world champion team?
Yeah, definitely, because Maradona used, it's well documented, he used over 100 players in qualifying, but he's now settled on his
23.
He's settled on his 23, but in all their warm-up matches, he picked the same 11. They're settled, they've done well. And, you know, he gave a press conference today. Our own Sean Ingle was at it, as was Marina Hyde from The Guardian. I think it was 250 people jam-packed into it. And he was quite pleasant and humble, didn't say anything mad, thanked everyone for coming. And
ran nobody over.
Didn't run anyone over and call them an arsehole or whatever. So, yeah, it went quite well.
Apparently they had a fight on the training ground, though, the other day, the Argentine players. But that's kind of, you know, fiery Latin stuff. It's probably a good sign.
Possibly.
Yeah. Who's going to who'll be up front then with this settled 11 of his?
It looks like he's going to play a front three with Messi, Higuain and Tevez.
Oof.
On the left. And Di Maria will probably play in midfield along with Veron and Mascherano. It looks like he's even going to play a right winger at right back in Gutierrez.
Crikey. And Nigeria have got against that who? Obafemi Martins and Yakubu.
Yakubu, yeah.
And no John Michelobi.
And difficult for them, of course, because they fired their manager after he'd gone on this incredible unbeaten run and brought in Lars Lagerbeck, who's probably not that familiar with Nigerian football.
It does smack slightly of a sort of cultural chasm there. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to that kind of management. I'm sure Lars Lagerbeck is used to dealing with a quite different mentality and style of expression or otherwise from his players. But I think the Argentina thing is interesting because the Maradona factor is so unpredictable that you feel that this team has to evolve as the tournament goes on. And I think even the first game, we're not necessarily going to learn that much about Argentina's chances when it really comes down to it. And we all know how much talent they've got, but once the knockout game starts and those pressures start to shift and the tiny details become so much more important, that's when we see how much this team can manage with the kind of Maradona factor on top of them, and to see if that adds to the pressure, to see if Maradona can take pressure away from them, to see if Maradona can actually tactically cope with perhaps some bigger challenges ahead.
Well, it's an extraordinary lineup of talent, and you'd have to favour Argentina in that clash, you know, in betting terms.
The other thing is looking at the games, in Group A that we've just seen today, whoever finishes second in the other group, I mean, we're all expecting Argentina to win it, but whoever finishes second in the other group probably thinks to themselves, well, I quite fancy some of that, because none of today's teams have proved themselves to be a really fantastic shot. And I bet that if South Korea or Nigeria or whoever, I'm not necessarily thinking it's going to be Greece, come through, they could well be getting to quite a good stage.
Now, first game of Group C takes place Saturday night when England take on USA, the team that beat them in 1950s, everybody's been banging on about. There are not so many people mentioning 1993 when Alexi Lalas, of course, leapt salmon-like into the, I think it was the Washington Air, was it not? Was that game not in Washington? But anyway, somewhere in the States, and headed home with a goal which defeated Graham Taylor's England.
Should probably say Guardian columnist Alexi Lalas.
Oh, there you go.
He's in the paper tomorrow.
He's not? Yeah. Yeah, really? Okay. There you go. Well, anyway.
I saw his ban.
Did you? I had the benefit of an impromptu unplugged concert by Alexi in his house. I visited him in his house when he was playing at Padova. And he strummed. He got out his guitar and strummed for me and the Channel 4 viewers, as it was in
those
days.
You stressed that he got out his guitar after you said he was strumming in front of you.
and he played his song Kicking Balls, the refrain from which was maybe we're all just kicking balls, and it was kind of a footballer's metaphor for life thing. It's plenty to think
about. So it sounds like the gig you got to see was even worse than the one I saw, which was
I don't know
dismal.
If that's a... Yeah. Anyway, Alexi Lawless.
Barry, did you actually pay to watch Alexi Lawless?
No, I didn't. I can't stress enough that I didn't. He was in Dublin playing a gig, and I had was on the guest list because I worked for a music magazine at the time. I was sent along with a view to ridiculing him like a big fish in a barrel, and I was there with hand grenades.
Indeed. Now, anyway, USA once again taking on England Saturday evening. And to give us a bit of an idea about the mood in the States ahead of this clash, let's now join Liz Hotel from The Guardian's very own international shadowy network of World Cup football fans. Liz, are you there?
I am here. Hello.
Hello, Liz. Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us. What is the what is the atmosphere there? Cautious optimism, downright pessimism? What would it be?
A couple of days ago, I would have said cautious optimism, but today it's kind of graduated into what I see as official bloodlust.
Bloodlust.
I think that people are. Oh yes. Oh yes. People are. They're ready. It's on. There's actually, you know, exceptional unity amongst everyone I've talked to here. Non-fans, you know, MLS fans, Premier League fans, everyone's kind of united by a desire to see England brought down.
Right. That's interesting, because one of the stereotypes, of course, about America in a World Cup is that a lot of the population, even during the tournament, won't be aware that anything is actually going on. That's not the case this time.
No, and, you know, I have to take kind of kind exception to Lawrence Donegan's piece today in The Guardian, because everyone I know knows that it's going on. You know, here in D.C., they're putting up giant screens. I've seen jerseys everywhere. I think there's a really, really high awareness. And, you know, amongst general sports fans, too, now they know even people that don't follow soccer are going to watch tomorrow.
Landon Donovan wants to take on Ashley Cole, and he's been threatening to use some trash talking. Is that right?
It's extraordinary. I mean, he really has officially become Mandan. He is, you know, ready to be the anchor of this team. And, you know, U.S. soccer players are usually so well-behaved. They're not bad boys in any way. So to hear Landon Donovan kind of going off like that, that's pretty much unprecedented. I mean, I don't think that there's any truth to the idea that they're going to wind up Rooney in the game. I think that, you know, the U.S. doesn't play a psychological game like that. And, you know, Donovan's not going to turn into Gattuso overnight. But I do think the sense of kind of, you know, the U.S. sees an opportunity. They know that the English team is a mess, and they're prepared, they've worked hard, and this is our World Cup final tomorrow.
Liz, I'm just wondering whether the Confederations Cup last year, in which the U.S. Did really well, has made a difference to the way people are feeling and anticipating this.
It has, but in an kind of unexpected way. I think that people were so kind of pumped up after the U.S. beat Spain, and the media just blew that completely out of proportion. And so when the U.S. lost to Brazil, people were devastated. So the media is playing it much smarter this time. They're really managing expectations. There's a lot less kind of hyper fist pumping Team USA, Team USA, Team USA, and more of a sense that the team has worked really hard. They've learned their lessons. Dempsey and Donovan have gone and done a good job in England. And more than anything, that they're a really cohesive, unified team. And that's a big point of pride for them, I think, in contrast to, you know, how they see the English team.
Liz, just finally then, a quick prediction. Can USA beat England, or are England just going to walk all over them?
No, I think that, I know they always say the first 20 minutes are crucial, but I think that in this game, for the U.S., they're beyond crucial, because their only chance is to come out, play physical, play cohesive, you know, out of the gate attacking football, because they can't let England settle. Because if they let England settle, you know, there's no answer in the U.S. defense for Rooney. So they've got to go out quick, get a goal. I mean, luckily, you know, they have Dempsey who can do it. He can pull it out when he needs to. And as long as they can score in the first half and go into halftime ahead, yes, I think that they can win, absolutely.
Soft, strong, and very, very long. This is World Cup Daily with James Richardson.
Interesting. Many people feel... Oh, sorry, though.
This notion of Landon Donovan as some sort of hard man is, I find it hard to buy, really.
Right.
Sort of looks like a little chartered accountant or something.
Well,
it's not going to strike terror into anyone's heart, is it?
Well, you know, on Monday, there we make it sound like America could, well, we're almost the favourites for this game. And many posters felt that Monday's preview was overly negative about England's chances. They did, after all, put together a near-perfect qualifying campaign. And they got players that many teams around the world would love to have in their lineups.
I think that's very unfair. A lot of our listeners are very jingoistic and they perceive any criticism whatsoever of England or any injection of realism into proceedings at all as negativity. It's just saying that England aren't the greatest team in the world is not doing them down. It's just a fact.
Well, but they might turn out to be. That's the thing. It was an amazing qualifying campaign, John. Better than even Spain's in many ways. But the recent form hasn't been so convincing. The game against Mexico, Japan. What's happened, and is it going to all be put right on the night?
Well, the teams have lost friendlies before big tournaments. Before, I think Brazil lost to an Umbrian regional team ahead of Italian 90. Although they didn't have a great tournament there. But I mean, you can't always extrapolate the friendly form into tournaments. I think, you know, if you actually look at the two teams down on paper, I mean, there really isn't a great deal of comparison between the two. You've got Aaron Lennon, who's likely to line up against Carlos Bocanegra, who was lacking pace when he was at Fulham a few years ago and can only have got slower now. Heskey and Rooney, okay, well, Wayne Rooney at least is going to be up against a guy who's not played a game for Milan this year due to injury, even if he can make it fit, and a Watford centre-half. I mean, England should certainly win this game. Although,
well, that same token, Spain should have beaten the USA last summer in the Confederations Cup.
True. Well, we had a lot of people, because we mentioned that, of course, and a lot of people were posting and saying, you've taken that result a bit out of context because they had a horrible summer and they just happened to get it on, as it were, for that game in which Spain possibly weren't fielding their first choice 11 and certainly weren't into the game particularly.
I think they were a fairly strong side as far as I can remember. They certainly didn't put out a reserve team. And then even in the final against Brazil, it was close. I think that's being a bit harsh on the USA.
It's a fair point. The USA do tend to be greater than the sum of their parts in England.
They've got real will to win that you find in all American sports people where, you know, that's something that, in a way, when you look at England's past tournaments, that nerves seem to get on top of them, and sometimes you wonder why they can't quite play as they do for their clubs and so on. That's such a normal thing to have with England, and that's not the case with America. They've got that real doggedness, and they really, 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 really hate being beaten, and you can see it in a way that the mentality of when England players sometimes get a bit kind of withdrawn or nervous or inhibited. If USA play badly, they play badly, but it's not going to be for want of sheer bloody-mindedness.
Your prediction, Amy?
Draw.
John?
I think England will win.
Barry?
I think the USA might win.
Right.
I've predicted it in my betting feature. Which
okay.
You're the only one not to have predicted, so come on.
I think England will win. In the words of poster BBC BBC, where else but in Africa for the Lions to roar again? And on those stirring words, we'll bring to an end today's inaugural World Cup Daily. We'll be back on Saturday night, depending on your local time zone, with our reaction to Day 2 of South Africa 2010. Do join us there. Remember, tweet your comic headlines at B. Glendenning.
I don't want them. You can deal with them.
At AC Jimbo.
I'll be your secretary.
Right. And or just post them in. That might be easier, in fact. Just post them in on the World Cup Daily message boards, which will remain open during tomorrow's games. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.